Okay, I did it. So tonight we're on We Agnostics, and we're not gonna finish the chapter because we're on page 52, and it goes to 57. But there's so much information in these pages that we may only cover two or three pages today, because I went through it in a lot of detail today, and I mentioned this yesterday. I'm starting to see new things when I am preparing now. I don't know if it's just I'm more energized or God's revealed more, but I'm seeing more, and I'm seeing how things tied together. So for me, it's been a great experience. There's some things we're going to read tonight that I hadn't really put together before. And this chapter is so powerful. It really, it's something that everyone has to be confronted with at one time or another, the idea of belief turning to faith. And we ended up with the bedevilments on page 52. And to be bedeviled means to be tormented or, I wrote it down here, I can't read my mind, or harassed maliciously. Those are not good things. And the bedevilments are on page 52, and it said, we had to ask myself why I shouldn't apply to my human problems the same readiness to change my point of view. They were actually talking about my view of God or my creator or a power greater than myself. And it says, if I'm having trouble with personal relationships, I can't control my emotional nature, I'm prey to misery and depression, I couldn't make a living, I had a feeling of uselessness, I am full of fear, I'm unhappy, I can't seem to be of real help to other people. And these are called the benevolments, and this is where they're really talking about the unmanageability in the first step, the spiritual malady. This is what the spiritual malady looks like. If you're having these problems, it's because you have no relationship with God, you're running your own life. And they talk about the same readiness to change your point of view of God, but really what I need to change my point of view is of how I'm looking at situations to how God sees them. And Phil mentioned that last night. If I change my point of view of the way I see things, then I won't be seeing things in this way, and these bedevilments won't be true. And we're going to see how that ties in to the question on page 53, and I never saw that before. And it says, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. And so how do we do that when we come in the AA? Well, we have the fellowship. We hear people's stories. We hear how people changed and how they had a simple reliance upon God. And then how can we doubt it when they were as hopeless as we are today? And so the big book is a testimony to that. That's why the big book is so powerful, because it's a testimony to people who had a hopeless condition of mind and body who found a relationship with God, and they were recovered. It says our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So here's another thing I saw. My ideas didn't work for anything. And my ideas was what got me the bedevilments. And so I have to give up on my old ideas. Remember, it says that. We read it tonight and how it works. It's a simple line. We hear it every meeting, but it's really the most powerful thing. I have to give up all my old ideas. Absolutely, or the results nil. But the Gaia idea did work. And it says, the Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Remember, they had to start with belief, and it turned into faith. Now, one of the problems I have with this chapter is that they intertwine belief and faith, and sometimes it gets confusing. And belief is different than faith. And I had a bad shoulder. I had a torn rotator cuff, and it was really bothering me. And somebody told me that they went to this doctor, and this doctor could do this arthroscopic and fix it. So I believed what they said, and I made an appointment, and I talked to him, and he looked at it, and he said he thought he could fix this. So I made a decision to let him do the surgery, and then we had the surgery, and then I can swim today. So I have faith that if I tear it again, if I go back to this doctor, he can fix it. Now, the example Joe and Charlie use, and I didn't bring it up last week, is they say if you break your car breaks down and you're in a strange town, and Matt shows up and says, I know how you can get your car fixed. I know a great mechanic. You take it to him, he'll give you a fair price, the car will be great. Well, you don't know if that's going to happen, but I believe Matt. So you take the car to the place, you get it fixed, and then it works, and you have faith. So the next time your car breaks down, you'll go to that mechanic. Now, we don't know in our relationship with God when we start how it's going to work out. We just believe it. But for those of us who are doing it, we have true faith because we trust that when we turn to God and we do the spiritual exercise of the steps, we know the result. And so the Wright brothers began with belief, but once they got in the air and they came back on the ground, they had faith. They knew they could do this. And without that belief, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. How's that working for you? And we talked about the first step a little bit yesterday. And the first step, what I really have to give up, is my idea on self-sufficiency. And that's really what the third step is, this decision to give up on self, not to play God. And as soon as I get back into self-sufficiency, things don't work well. And so it's hard to give up on that idea of self-sufficiency, and I think that's why people die in AA. They cannot give up on themselves and their plans and their ideas, and so they won't do the deal. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted the rights would never fly. Imagine these people said, you cannot do it. You cannot do it. So then he did it. And they said, wow, we should have changed our mind. Well, that was an old idea that told them that people couldn't fly, right? And so it's an old idea that my self-sufficiency will solve my old problems. And so I need a new idea of God's sufficiency. And then I was thinking how it works. What is the it? What are we working? How do I go from self-sufficiency to God's sufficiency? So that I go from belief to faith. What's the process? And it's the 12 steps of AA. And it says, logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. Why? Because it's my logic. It's not by chance we are given the power to reason, to examine the senses, the evidence of our senses to draw conclusions. That is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which did not lend itself to reasonable approach interpretation. So we're dying, right? People are dying that come to AA. And they're sitting here deciding whether this thing's going to work for them. You see, they're judging it. They're looking at it. They're thinking it out. Does this make sense? You know? And so when you're doing that, you're not completely defeated yet because you're not open-minded and willing as the dying have become. Remember, we reach out with the desperation of drowning men. So here it says, hence we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable. So I looked up pains. It's a careful effort. Great trouble. They're giving us a lot of effort to let us know why their faith was reasonable, why they think it's more logical to believe than to believe, why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said we don't know. Well, here's the big paragraph in the big book, and this is the paragraph that applies to me every minute of every day. And it's called the second step proposition. And we have a second step proposition exercise on fear, because fear comes from how we answer this question. And it says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, I could not postpone or evade. So became is the simple past tense of become. So when I become an alcoholic, does that mean that I'm crushed by self-imposed crisis I could not postpone or evade? So what are they really talking about? Well, you're an alcoholic a long time before you were crushed, right? But I think what they're talking about now is when you hit bottom, when you hit that moment of complete defeat, and when you're completely crushed, and you can't postpone or evade, that you have no power here. Because before that point, you won't give up. And it says, when you've reached that crisis, and it's self-imposed, that's the thing. I know that it was self-imposed. I brought myself to this point. I could not fix it. Then I have to face this question that either God is everything or else he is nothing. It's a simple question. Now, there's no third part to this. God either is everything or he's nothing. And then, in case you don't know that, they say, God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? Now, everybody would say, well, I'm going to choose God, right? Of course, if you're crushed in self-imposed crisis. But what do they really mean by this? They mean that when you're completely defeated, that you only have two choices. Either God is everything or he's nothing. He can't be everything in one area of my life and nothing in the other area. He has to be everything in all areas of my life. And so what is my choice? So this is the choice you make all day long. You don't even realize it. You're going through the day. You're worrying about the job. Well, you're not giving God the job. You're worried about your relationship. Well, you're not giving God your relationship. You're worried about money. You're not giving God money. What areas of my life am I not giving God everything? And then those are the areas that you're having trouble in. And so people call this, they'll say, where is your agnosticism today? And these people have this term for it, Joe Hawk and some of these other speakers. And what they're really saying is, what areas of my life am I still choosing to play God? That's the area I'm having trouble with. And it could be the job today, and it could be at home the next week, and it could be money the day after. And so when they call this the second step question, because it's in the second step chapter on agnostics, but this is where fear comes from. All my fear comes from self-reliance. And if I'm relying on myself to fix an area of my life because I'm playing God, I'm afraid. I was in AA for years before somebody explained that to me. I always had fear. But now I see if I'm afraid, I'm managing that area. So I have the God box. I have the prayer. So what's my choice to be? It's the only choice I make all day long. So a lot of people like to say prayers when they wake up in the morning. Well, they're choosing God to be everything in their life. But then we need the 10th step because all day long we may choose to separate from God into self. And when we do that, then we're everything in that area. So this is something, a way you can look at how you're doing your daily walk with God is where you're playing God and not playing God. And then when we play God, we don't feel good, right? And we have selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We ask God to remove them, and we change. So this is a barometer of when you're not feeling well, you're playing God. Now, it's right across from the paragraph on bedevilments. It's like 24 and 25. 24 had without defense against the next drink, and then on page 25 it has a solution. And the bedevilments are where I'm playing God. And I've chosen to run my life, and it's right across from the question of what is my choice to be. So that's a question that when I take the wrong approach to it, my day doesn't go well. It's not that complicated. It says, arrived at this point. So you arrived at the point of God either isn't, what is our choice to be? It says, then you're squarely confronted with the question of faith. Now I have this handout. Everybody have the picture of the bridge? Now the picture of the bridge I got from the steps we took. And on the, if you're listening to the podcast, it's in the PDF, and it's on the process of change and the principles behind the steps. So here we're going to talk about this bridge in this next paragraph. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. So we start with our reason, and we're living on reason, and then we're in the first step, right? And it says, the outlines and the promise of the new land had brought luster to tire eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Now listen to this. They put this line in the book since the last time I read it. It said, perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. So it's a very intellectual way of saying, I wouldn't give up on myself, on what I thought. I couldn't go the final distance to get what I needed for a relationship with God. I held on to me and what I thought, because I didn't like to lose my thinking, my support. And I wrote, you can't get the deal, can't get faith. if you hold on to your thinking. So your reason and relying on your reason is going to kill you. It's going to keep you from getting to a relationship with God. And it says, why? Because we don't want to give up. And so when we have that self-imposed crisis and we're crushed, we have that moment of complete defeat. We need to keep that alive so we'll let go of my reason. And we'll let go of what I think of this so I can step to faith. Now, here's this bridge. And Joe and Charlie were the first people that explained to me how you change, how you go from a self-centered person to a person who's God-centered and with knowledge of God's will and His power. It starts with belief. So we're on this edge. And belief, I get on the bridge because I'm willing, because I'm dying, right? So I'm willing to get on the bridge. And if I have some belief, I've gotten a little bit off the shore, but not very far. Then I make a decision in the third step to change, right? I need to change, and I can't change myself, so I want God to change me and fix my thinking, and that's letting go of my will. So I'm stepping away from my will towards God's will. Then I take the actions of 4 through 10, and the result is on step 11, I have knowledge of God's will for me, and I have power to carry it out. And then I have faith. So the 5 steps in change are willingness to change, believe you can change, decide to change, take the action to change, and then change. So the faith we talk about in AA is the result of the steps. So when they say work the steps, that's what they're talking about. Because to get true faith, you have to have done the action. So I know when I'm afraid today, then I'm relying on self, I'm managing that area of my life. I say, Michael, you're wrong again. Shame on you. Wasting time, full of fear, managing the world. And I say, God, remove my fear, direct attention how I should be right now. I should be grateful. I should be patient, honest, be responsible, play the role you assign. Get out of the results. And so it works, and I know it'll work. It'll go away. The fear will go away. So you can't just stop in the middle of the bridge and say, I've done enough, right? People do that. They say, I'm doing great. I'm doing good. I don't need to finish the steps. Well, they're not there yet. They're not at the end. And so why don't people go through all the steps? They're very willing when they come in, right? And they're all willing to go to any length until you ask them to do anything. But why do they stop? Because they get back into reason. They start thinking, or they get a little bit well. And this seems too drastic. The first thing that happens, they cut back on their meetings. Or you give them an assignment, and they kind of, it takes them a long time to get it done, or they don't call you anymore. It's very subtle how the ego rebuilds. So I don't know, but I got a lot out of this, these 2 pages. And it says, and I wrote here, if I rely on reason, I have no power. I just have my power, which got me here, and my thinking. It says, without knowing it, had we not brought to where we were stood by a certain kind of faith. And this is really a really interesting 2 paragraphs that I've read before, but I didn't really get much out of it. And see what you think. It says, did I not believe in my own reasoning? Well, of course we did, right? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? You see, when we came in here, we had a plan. We thought we knew what was right. It was all their fault. What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, I had been faithful, abjectly faithful to the God of reason. See, I was worshiping my mind, my thinking, and that became my higher power. I actually believed what I thought. Now, when I did the 4th and 5th step, I realized that most of the stuff I thought was wrong, and I was relying on wrong information. And it starts with me playing God. So one way or another, I discovered the faith had been involved in all the time. It was the wrong faith. And I wrote page 62, and page 62 tells me that I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And it said that I must be rid of my selfishness, my troubles are my own making, and I was driven by 100 forms of fear, delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. and I made decisions based on self, which put me in a position of the heart. That whole page is really talking about this relying on me and my reasoning and how it was killing me. And it's also told me that I can't get rid of it on my own. I need God's help. So I had to give up on my reason and what I thought of things to rely on what other people told me to do. Because there's no chapter in here on what do you think of this? Write your analysis of the steps. You know, Sandy Beach makes the point. He's so funny. He's a lot funnier than I am. But he says when people come in, they have the wristband. You know, they're in treatment. We don't ask them what their plan in their life is. Because their plan got them here. He says they should be asking us, what's our plan? And all AA is saying in a nice way to all of us is if your plan didn't work, just try this. Try these steps. Try this and see if it works for you. And then when we open up, people will talk how it did. And here, listen to this paragraph. We found, too, that I'd been worshipers. See, I'd been worshiping things. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. But hadn't we worshiped people, relationships, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then with better motive, have we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or flower? Most of us should not love something or somebody. How much of these feelings, these worships, have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing we saw at last. Were not these things, look at this, the tissue out of which my lives were constructed, what I worshipped or what I thought I needed to be happy, how rest, satisfaction, happiness out of life if I managed well. And I was worshipping the things outside of me that I thought would bring me peace and happiness, and I was just worshipping the wrong things. It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we were living by faith and little else. So what they're telling us is that we were worshiping the wrong things. We were worshiping our self-centered ideas on what we thought would be good for us and not what God's will was for us. So then here they're going to talk about life without faith, and they talk about you can't prove that a straight line is the shortest distance between two points, but there it is. You can't prove the electrons, but we know how they work. And then you get to the bottom of the page. Hence, we saw that reason isn't everything. And look at this. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. I can't rely on my mind anymore, my reasoning. I don't know that it's true. If it's self-centered, I'm going to see things wrong. Remember the speaker, the vulture in the bedpost? He gets these ideas. Does anybody have ideas come in your head? They just come in. And he says it's his thinker. He says it's really tried to kill him. But he says to his thinker when he gets these ideas, what's your source of information? And you know, when I heard that, I said, wow. And sometimes I'll listen to my thinker and I won't stop and I'll believe it. But then I have to stop and say, what's my source of information? It's either rooted in fear or anger, and it's from choosing me and not God. And so it's not entirely dependable. When you do your fourth and fifth step and you look at your life story, you see how you're thinking, got you, made such a mess of it, how you harm people, you can see that. It says, on page 55, we've been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. See, that's what the fellowship, you know, we talked on seeing the truth and how we have to rely on other people. We have to rely on other people to show us that there is a power in their life. We have to rely on other people to know that I'm not the only answer. I need help. And remember, God speaks through people, and he works through others. And so when we isolate ourselves, we're alone with our own reasoning. And that's why people say, get a sponsor. Well, what they tell you is get somebody that you're talking to who's not you. And then the sponsor tells you to call every day. Why they do that? Because they want you to be responsible for something besides you. And then you're starting to break down your self-centeredness. And that's why going to meetings is such a powerful way of taking the first step. And going to meetings reminds us that we need each other and we can't do it alone. And then the power of the fellowship is to help people who are new see that there's a power here. They said these God made these things possible and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true. There's no way if you're really open-minded, when you come to an AA meeting, if you really look around and hear a meeting where people are sharing where they were and what's happening now, where you can't believe there's a power of God. I knew that because when I got down on my knees, I said, I'm going to go back to AA. And I'm going to do everything they tell me because they have something that I don't have. And I don't know how to fix this. So in the beginning, AA can be your higher power, the people in the group, because they have something we don't have. They have a solution to a hopeless condition of mind and body. And remember, it says on page 20, the only question you're supposed to ask when you come in here is, what do I do? And then Sandy Beach says, what do I do next? He says, that's all your sponsor's supposed to do. He said, nobody ever asked him that. But he said, that's what they're supposed to say. What do I do next? What do I do now? Because what I want to do or what I think I need to do, I can't rely on that in the beginning. And so that's where we are when we come to these next two paragraphs, really three paragraphs. So I can either open it up or I can go on. Should I go on? It's good stuff. All right. It says, now these three paragraphs are the whole deal. And I think it changed the way human beings look at God. I think AA had a powerful spiritual presence in this book. And look what it says. It says, actually, I'm fooling myself. For deep down, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Now, the guy who, in Shadowlands, what was his name? C.S. Lewis wrote a great book. And if you haven't read it, you can get it on Amazon. It's called Mere Christianity. And I didn't think it could help me at all, but then Sandy Beach said he made everybody read the first 40 pages. So I said, well, I'll do what Sandy says. And this was years ago, and I read it, and it's really powerful. And what he says is that throughout all civilized history, or all of mankind, there's always been this relationship with something greater than ourselves that we knew right from wrong. We had this inherent conscious, all human beings forever, so that we knew kind of what the rules, the moral rules for existence should be. And it's been there forever, and he calls that the idea of God. And so that's what AA is saying. And they read C.S. Lewis, by the way. And the first 40 pages are really powerful. And so there is the fundamental idea of God inside all of us. And remember, it's Michelangelo and God giving Moses, trying to connect the finger, the power. It's the first finger. It's not the third finger. Let's be serious here. This is serious stuff. And it says, but here's the thing. I obscured it by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things. I obscured God. I blocked him out. And the fourth step is where we face and be rid of the things that are blocking me from God. So God's inside of me. I've blocked him out with my own ideas, my own reasoning, what I was worshiping. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. And you can't argue with that. You can see it in the world. You can see it in the rooms. And then here's where we find God. Here's how we find God in AA. We finally saw that some faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup. See, it's part of us. We have this inherent longing for God, Carl Jung said, alcoholics, and that we're looking for this outside of ourselves to find this power to feel okay, and we use alcohol to treat that, but it's really inside of us all the time. And it says, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Now, you know how you feel to a friend, that's the way we have this faith in God. It's part of us, but we've obscured it. And part of the process of the steps is to unobscure that so you can feel that power. It's the St. Francis prayer, really, how you become a channel of God's peace. And it says, sometimes I had to search fearlessly. Does that sound like a step? You see the fourth and fifth step. I searched fearlessly, but he was there. If you can get on XA speakers and listen to Father Bill W. tell his story, it's from 1982, and I played it before, and like Susie was telling me the other day, I should play it again. It's her favorite. He talks about this being a Jesuit priest studying in the Vatican, PhD in theology, and how he didn't understand where God was till he read this paragraph. And he talks about it. There's no ends or buts in this paragraph. If you search fearlessly, he is there. God is as much a fact as I am. So does anybody believe that they exist in this room? We all believe we're here right now. So just as much as I believe that, God is here. He's a fact. And it says, I found the great reality, another term for God, deep down within me. And in the last analysis, the final analysis of my personality, when I peel away all the things in my character that aren't God, in the last analysis, there he is found. And so it is with us. So how do we find God? We peel away all the things in me that are blocking me. We look at our card, all the things on the left-hand side, all the character defects, all the things that are blocking me from God. And then we want to be a channel of his peace, like the St. Francis prayer, right? And so that's what we try to do in our inventory. And the final analysis, he's there, he's with us. And so he's a great fact. So I know God's inside of me and available with me all the time. So the great problem is why I don't seek and use that power all the time. He says that's the riddle of our existence, they said in the 12 of 12. Why when God can remove us of all of our obsession to drink and he can change us in so many ways, why don't we ask him to change all of us? Why we don't rely on him all the time? And so what we find in 10 and 11 is when we move away from God with our free will, we get back out of self, back into God, and we analyze how we separated and we find God again. And that's how we're in the now. So in the final analysis, where is God found? In the now, right in this moment with us. So I'm going to stop with that tonight. We're going to finish the rest of the chapter next week. There's a lot of good stuff in there. And if you can listen to Father Bill on XA, that's really good stuff. I may bring it in play one time. So.